Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It. I'm Kusha Navidar in for Allison Stewart today. We're sharing some encore presentations of my conversations from when I've guest hosted All of It in the past, as well as some more recent favorites. Now we'll talk about a three-part docuseries investigating a billion-dollar industry scamming people in the name of charity. It's called Telemarketers. In the documentary, two former employees of the Civic Development Group, commonly referred to as CDG, expose what goes on inside the boiler rooms of callers asking for donations. You might have received some of those calls yourselves. And we also talk about the people that manage them and the unions that support them. A Vulture review says, Telemarketers is part Jackass-style debauchery, part Michael Moore-style expose, and a fantastically fluorescent piece of Bush-era kitsch. What a description. Adam Balolow and Sam Lipman-Stern joined us on All of It to discuss it when the series was first released, and we did open up the phones for people to talk about their experiences with telemarketing scams. But listeners, a quick reminder, this is an encore presentation, so unfortunately we can't take any new calls right now. But I began by asking Sam Lipman-Stern how he got interested and involved with the Civic Development Group.
So I grew up in central New Jersey in a little town called Highland Park, right next to Rutgers University. And when I was 14, I wanted to leave high school. I wanted to basically, I wasn't interested in going to school anymore. I wanted to drop out. And my parents, who, shout out to my parents, they're hippies, great people. And they're like, all right, you can leave school, but you got to get a job. So I dropped out of the ninth grade and I had to get a job. That was what my parents said. If you're going to leave school, you got to get a job. So I went to Burger King and I went to McDonald's. They both told me, no, you're too young. So I was telling a buddy about it who was like 15 or 16, a good friend of mine. And he said, hey, dude, I got you, man. I'll bring you. I have a job for you. It's this call center in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and they'll definitely hire you at 14, no problem. So I remember my buddy Giancarlo and I, my friend, we rode our bikes into New Brunswick, New Jersey, and he brought me into this call center. The managers had me read the script, and they hired me right on the spot. And I remember my first day in there, I walked into the office, and there was all these like really built, you know, grown men, built guys, like doing push-ups next to the water fountains. And then I walked in and there's mug shots of the callers, like kind of like badge trophies on the walls. And that was my first day at CDG. That's how it all began.
And in this environment, there are a cast of characters and just interesting people that you run into. I'd love to listen to a clip. This is Sabrina Ross, one of your former colleagues, talking about what it was like to work at CDG. Let's listen.
CDG is just like anything you can ever imagine in a gangster film, right in front of you. It was like, who's going to get shot or robbed? Every day was a new adventure.
So tell us about the environment. What made you decide to pick up a camera and start recording?
Well, yeah. So I was, you know, the first thing that I found really interesting about CDG, Civic Development Group, was the characters. You know, you had some, you know, high school dropouts like me. You had a couple, you know, college kids or, you know, young people. But, you know, mostly or a large amount of the callers were people that were right out of prison. So people with, you know, whether they were just transitioning into you know, the workforce and were landed this job through a halfway house. But you had, you know, some young people, and then you had a lot of people with that were felons. So, you know, I remember working with people who were actually convicted murderers. We had drug kingpins working in the office. There were all kinds of interesting characters there working. And the reason was this was one of the only jobs that would hire people with felonies, you know. And I always say that the best thing about this job was that it gave people an opportunity to have work who wouldn't have been hired elsewhere. But there were just so many characters there with fascinating stories. One guy told me that had just got out of prison after 7 years. He's in the documentary, Xantino the God. But he said when he came out of prison after 7 years for a drug charge, he said working at CDG was crazier than prison.
Wow.
So if that says anything, yeah. I think it's pretty apparent, you know.
And Adam, you became involved in this project much later. Upon reviewing some of the earlier footage, what did you think this documentary was going to be about initially?
I mean, it was kind of wild how I came involved. Sam's my cousin-in-law, and we've been living together. We've been living in LA at the same time, but we never met. And my mother-in-law, shout out Elizabeth Spector, she was always saying, "Oh, you gotta meet your cousin Sam. He wants to be a filmmaker. You gotta help him out." And I was always like, "God, I don't want to meet this guy." But then Sam came in and he showed me this footage on this hard drive that he'd been shooting for like 12 years, and it was like it was an epiphany. It was like I was like, "This is amazing. This is gold." It was so real and raw, but the best thing about it was the characters, and like you said, but specifically Pat Pespis, the sort of main character who had kind of taken control of the documentary and was, you know, out in front leading this investigation. And Pat Pespis was, you know, a one of a kind, a one in a million character. You're lucky if you ever come across a character like him. So immediately I started sending clips of Pat to the Safdies, to Josh and Benny.
And I want to talk about Pat Pespis in a second, because he is a central character that I found very captivating. So I want to bring that back to Pat, because of what you, I'm not going to ruin anything, but what you discover during the course of the movie. Sam, your friendship with Patrick Pespis is a really big part of the series. Why do you think this issue and documentary was so important to him?
You know, I think Pat always, you know, he was someone who, he had a really interesting backstory. I mean, he grew up with motorcycle gangs. His father was a really well-known tattoo artist named Chris the Greek Pespis. And he would tattoo motorcycle gangs. So Pat was basically raised by the Hells Angels. And he had a really interesting childhood and backstory. But one thing that was very clear about Pat is he always wanted to help people. You know, he was very empathetic. You know, he's the guy that when if you're, I remember one time I had a flat tire outside of CDG. He's the guy that would stay after to fix your flat tire. It doesn't matter what time of night, you know, he really cared about the people around him. Everyone in the office loved him, but he also cared about political issues. You know, he was, we see in episode one, him talking about climate change in the Bush era. Mm-hmm. And, I think Pat just really wanted to, you know, he wanted to tell this story to try to make change and hopefully have the money go to the right place rather than going to, you know, scams, essentially.
We were talking about one person from the documentary, Patrick Pespis, and what I wanted to do was play a quick clip from him talking during the movie.
Pat was very sweet, like such an innocent soul. He never did nobody wrong. He was just like the sweetest thing. I remember Pat speaking about justice and how things were just not right.
If it's going to cost money for big corporations in this country to do away with global warming, it's going to be very slow to happen. As a matter of fact, when Bush took office, he denied global warming even existed. Only now does he make a very remote, well, it might be happening. Yeah, right.
Does this mean an end to the world? Through global warming?
I don't know. Well, yeah, if we don't act soon.
Are we
going
to still go to the restaurant?
Sam, Adam, something that really stuck to me and I think is evidenced in this past clip we just heard is the variety of people and how just because you work for the telemarketing industry doesn't necessarily mean you feel morally right about doing so. And maybe you do, but there is just such a spectrum of people approaching this kind of work. And we have a caller here who looks like he might have some experience as well. Richard from Brooklyn. Hi, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good,
well,
thanks.
Well, telemarketing is like an entry-level job. Anybody who can talk can get a job as a telemarketer. Mm. And, you know, you're talking to people who really don't want what you, like, a couple of times I had telemarketing jobs, it was just to get you dialing cold and just to get people to listen to a salesman. And you had this, and you knew it was bull. And finally, I got into doing political polls, which was a bit better because you didn't have to sell anything.
Richard, thank you so much for that. So, you know, Adam, last week, federal officials did arrest Richard Zeitlin, who ran telemarketing call centers, and Robert Pirro, a treasurer of political nonprofit groups, for exploiting important causes and the good intentions of everyday citizens. What progress has been made in preventing these scams?
Not enough. But I'm glad you mentioned Richard Zeitlin because, you know, spoiler alert, he appears in episode 3. Actually, it's a very harrowing moment in the episode. Our good friend Sarah Kleiner, who's an incredible investigative journalist, who we meet up with in episode 3, and she kind of becomes, you know, she kind of becomes our mentor in a way. And she plays us this audio clip of when she went to try to interview Richard Zeitlin. And he physically threatened her and chased her out of his office. And it's harrowing. So I was happy to see that, you know, he's getting himself into, you know, indicted.
And we have Cecilia from Highland Park, New Jersey. Cecilia, welcome.
Hi. I'm like the third time I've been able to get on. Thank you. I love this show.
Oh, wonderful.
So I actually have two stories. The first one is...
I'm from Highland Park. Did you knew that? I'm Sam
yes,
here.
I grew up
in Highland Park. Yeah.
I heard that. I mentioned
shout
that.
Shout out to Highland Park.
Bring it all together.
Town.
Cecilia, give me one of your stories.
Yeah, so I used to just ignore the calls. Well, I used to pick them up. But lately, if I pick up at all, and by the way, I got nomorobo.com, which is a scoops up known robocallers. Of course, they keep coming. But anyway, if a call comes in and I feel I should pick it up because I'm waiting for a call, I pick it up and say, "Go ahead, please. You're on the air. What's your question for our on-air staff?" And if it's somebody who's legitimate, like Cecilia, I'm like, oh, okay, you got my telemarketer voice. But, you know, so I like to mess around with them.
Wow. And has it been effective for you, Cecilia?
Sometimes, a lot of times it's just a hang up or it's already been hung up because they pump out these calls all the time. But yeah, and occasionally I play with them. Somebody wanted to sell me auto insurance and I was giving them an automobile that was from 1923 or something like that.
Well, Cecilia, thank you so much for, you know, calling and for giving those tips. I want to talk a little bit before we end. We have a few minutes here. Sam and Adam editing this final project. Adam, how did you decide what the ending would be? And you don't have to say what it was, but just there was a lot going on. How did you decide where you're going to go with it?
Oh, we didn't decide that, you know, this type of project, it tells you what it wants to be. It decides it for you. And, you know, maybe there, you know, will be another ending to this. And I, you know, we always said in the future of this project and of the future of this industry, the story's not done. Hopefully there'll be some change. There'll be some regulation. There'll at least some forward progress with this scam.
That was my conversation with filmmakers Adam Lowe and Sam Lipman-Stern. Their HBO docuseries is called Telemarketers. Up next, Eden Lapucky's latest novel, Time's Mouth, follows a woman who discovers an ability to time travel, which she then hones and transmits to other women. Lapucky joined me last summer to talk about it, and that discussion is coming up. This is All of It.